Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Dan and Benny in the Ring. I'm Dan Spastiano, joined, as always, by the BS Express himself, Benny Scala, or as we call him around here nowadays, Bad Benny. Benny, how you doing today?
Good. This is the only place in the wrestling universe where you can find Bad Benny.
Bad Benny. I like it. You're going to be the star of the show. So, Benny, last week you had quite a dust-up in your romantic side of your life. How's that going?
Yeah, I didn't really get to tell the end of the story, though. Like Paul Harvey, now you know the rest of the story. So, after the elephants threw the peanuts at her, we're walking along and we're kind of exiting the zoo. And one of the zookeepers stopped me and they took her and they gave me a $100 bill. And they said, "Oh, we're so glad you returned her."
Oh, no. That's terrible. Terrible. Tonight's show, we're going to be looking at the Fastlane pay-per-view. We're recording this the Tuesday after, so this is to the 23rd, and so we've had Raw as well, so we've got to see some of the fallout from Fastlane. WrestleMania is in 3 weeks. So before we get started on the match-by-match specifics, Benny, you were telling me before we started recording, you enjoyed the show. Overall, you thought it was a good event?
The one thing that maybe, like, the one negative would be just a lack of really any big surprises, I think. I mean, most of the matches kind of followed. They were pretty easy to predict. But, I mean, the matches themselves, there were several really, really good matches.
I agree. And I think before we get started to the main show, I want to talk about the pre-show, because the pre-show had both an angle and a match. Obviously, the match on the pre-show was the United States Championship. Riddle defending his, and that's just Riddle. Apparently, he's not Matt Riddle anymore. Hasn't been for a while. I still find myself calling him Matt Riddle, but Riddle, just Riddle today. He defended the title against Mustafa Ali of Retribution. I thought it was a great back and forth. Those two had a lot of chemistry, a lot of good chemistry, I should say. I loved the combo Riddle had, where he kind of did a series of like knees into a power bomb, which I thought was great. Right. Obviously Ali was the high flyer in the match. The Koji clutch Ali uses. Riddle managed to escape that. I thought it was great, because they've obviously, Riddle's the MMA fighter. The fact that Ali was booked to be able to scrap with him on the ground gave him a nice bump off. I thought it was a great match. Riddle wins in the end. And at the end of the match, Ali begins to, again, the continued losing streak of that group. He begins to beat down Retribution. Well, I should say verbally beat down Retribution.
Mia Yim.
Right, yeah, exactly. Mia Yim, Reckoning, she walks off. Slapjack follows her. And then Dijakovic, T-Bar, and Mace, they lay him out with that double team choke slam powerbomb they do. So I guess they kicked him out of the group. On social media between yesterday and into this morning, several of the members of Retribution kind of stayed in character and acted like that was the beginning of the end, goodbyes, good riddance kind of thing. All in all, I thought it was a great pre-show. Usually the pre-show kind of feels like a throwaway. This felt like a little better than that. I'd say B+, but
yeah, I gave it a B+, 3.5 stars.
Yeah,
I actually thought, as far as Riddle, that was the best match that I've seen him in. They, like you said, they have great chemistry together. Ali, I wrote a note here, the backstabber. I think he actually did like a somersault from the ring apron and turned it right into a backstabber. That I thought that was great. That bro Derek from the second rope. All good moves. Like I said, B+, 3.5 stars. You kind of figured that Retribution was going to turn on him sooner or later, and this was the later. So I wonder if that's going to be anything for WrestleMania with them.
We'll see. I mean, I think that if you're going to have them involved in WrestleMania at all, that kind of be the way to do it.
Right.
It's a shot in the arm. They needed Retribution has been booked incredibly poorly since they've been formed. And losers kind of across. I mean, their very first televised match, they lost clean. Like, that, you can't get booked worse than that when you're trying to be a powerhouse.
The Ascension 2.0, right?
Exactly. I think you have quite a mix up there as far as like what you could do. I don't think of everybody on the roster, Ali felt like such a weird choice to be the secret leader. I get why they did it. They were kind of needed something to do with him, and then his feud with, the side matches that he was having with, obviously here we are at the U.S. title. He was kind of the under mid card. Him and Ricochet having their matches. I don't know. We'll see. I thought it was a good start. Certainly, my opinion, certainly better than the first match on the official card was the Women's Tag Team Championship. Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler defending against Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks. Now, we've talked about this on shows in the past with the women's title matches, where I believe it was two pay-per-views ago, I said that if you're going to drop the belts, you might as well abandon them. Because at no point going into this match did I think that Belair and Sasha Banks had a chance. They didn't need the titles. And before I get into the match itself, we talked about this before. This entire build has been terrible. You have arguably two of your best female talents on the roster getting ready for a WrestleMania match. Bianca Belair has been pushed to the pushed to the next echelon. She wins the Rumble. And the entire build for this match has been, can they coexist in a tag team and a Reginald subplot? There has been no, prior to the end of this match, which we'll get into, there has been no build, really, between the two of them. It's been, can we coexist? A little bit of jibber-jabber about who's better. But it really felt empty. And that played into this match. It was, I hate to word it this way because it happens a lot, but it's oftentimes you see in WWE when you have big women's matches being built up, it boils down to bickering teammates. You know, almost like the writer's room can't get past two women, just can't, oh, women can't get along when they're together kind of mentality, which is stupid.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, you've got, but no, the match itself I thought was ugly, honestly, as far as quality goes.
Yeah, I agree. I gave it a C+, and I think I was being generous, 2.5 stars. You know, and the funny thing is, they kind of flirted with Baszler and Jax fighting as well, but you knew that wasn't going to really happen. You knew they were going to win. You knew that the Belair and Banks were going to argue after the match, and so I'm wondering. I guess they needed a heel for the match, and you know, Sasha's going to be the heel.
It certainly seems that way. Because obviously, like I said, at the end of the match, after Reginald got involved, who saw that coming, right? Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks argued, and Banks seemed to be playing the veteran card. Like, you're just the rookie. You're not at my level. You know, she slapped her. She talked smack. It certainly seems like Banks is going to be the heel, which makes sense. As much as I like her in-ring work, the boss character just doesn't really translate to a face.
Right.
You're the jewelry wearing, I'm better than everybody, I'm the boss. I mean, that's literally your character. To be the baby face just kind of feels off. Plus, Bianca Belair actually has the athletic background, the scrapper who, you know, has gone persevered. You were much kinder to this match than I was. I gave it a D+.
Okay.
When I was making a note, I could maybe argue for a C- some of the moments. Like, Banks did have Bianca Belair had a kind of a moonsault 450 that was, I thought was great. And then that was when Reginald got involved. I just thought the whole thing is bad. And I mean, obviously we haven't recorded SmackDown for the week. The WWE hasn't aired SmackDown for this week, but you've got 3 weeks. You've had, since the Rumble, this is now the second pay-per-view since the Rumble, you've had 3 weeks. You've got 3 weeks to build up what could arguably be one of the better matches on the card. I think that doesn't do it justice.
I just don't understand why they drag this whole tag team thing out endlessly. It makes no sense. There's no really build up for the match. I mean, now there's a start, but you're starting 3 weeks out, which I think is way too late.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, now any real build these two are going to have is going to feel rushed, even if they do it well.
Right. Agree.
So yeah, it's a shame, but and then now obviously you have to look at where the women's title match is going. It's certainly, obviously, Raw has already been recorded this week. It certainly seems like Naomi and Lana are building themselves up. And the team of Tamina and Tamina and Natalya, I foresee the tag. It looks like the women's tag titles will be a multi-person match, multi-team match, like it was a couple of WrestleManias ago when the Iconics first won the belt. So, but leading on, moving into another match that I'm not 100% sure what they were going for here. Great potential, great story. I personally like where the story's going. You had the Intercontinental title match. Big E was defending against the new Nigerian prince, Apollo Crews. I mean, it was just a hoss match. Two big guys beating each other up. I liked the fact that it was quiet. The Thunderdome allows for a lot, you'd hear the wrestlers more, and you heard Big E talking, you know, you wanted this, you asked for this, you asked for me to be tough, and while he was beating up on Apollo Crews, Crews obviously came back control with the dropkick. I made the note that it seemed fast, and just as I was writing that down, the match was over.
Right.
I don't know if the pin was supposed to look sloppy. Like, are they going to bring up that, hey, you know, my shoulder was up, or the ref had a bad count? I mean, it's certainly, from the angle they played, it was hard to tell, but it definitely felt rushed. It felt like a botch. I don't know if that's what they were going for, but it felt like one of those moments where Apollo should have kicked out, or the ref didn't, you know, maybe the pin wasn't as clean as it could have been. They recovered nicely. Apollo snapped, beat up Big E. I like that Apollo Crews is using the Olympic slam. I know that's Kurt Angle's move, but I think it fits him and his character. It was hard to grade the match because it was over so fast. It felt more like an angle than a match. This definitely feels like this will be WrestleMania. The rematch will be at WrestleMania. It's what it feels like they're going for. But I like where the story's going. I just didn't really like how they presented this one.
I gave the match a C, 2 stars, and I had the note way too short. And I think, going along with your point, I do think something wasn't quite right, because the pin, you know, it was one of those pins where you really couldn't tell who was going to be awarded the victory.
Yeah.
And you would have thought, like, I expected them, the announcers, to kind of play on that, like, who won. But they immediately, Crews snapped, started attacking Big E, and then they just said, well, I guess, you know. So I think they could have done a better job of presenting that.
Yeah.
And like you said, the funny thing is, I have my note here that, you know, Apollo's doing a reverse Kofi Kingston. So, you know, when Kofi Kingston was, you know, first came upon the scene, and he had that heavy Jamaican accent.
Yeah, they advertised him as being Jamaican.
Right. And I mean, I watched his first vignette from, I guess, I don't know what, 2007, 2008. And he really had a thick Jamaican accent, which is completely gone now. You know, and when Apollo Crews comes in, you know, generic guy from, I believe he's from Sacramento, I think.
Well, he was born in the United States, from what I understand, but he is legitimately Nigerian. Kind of just like Kofi Kingston, you know, they advertise him being is from Ghana, that's actually his finishing move, Trouble in Paradise. That's where it comes from, because he was originally, you know, I'm not going to attempt to do the accent, but that was his catchphrase. There will be trouble in paradise.
Right.
You know, he was the Jamaican. I'll give him credit. I don't know how many years ago it was now. The New Day was just being the New Day, and one of their in-ring segments, they had built a time machine. You know, clearly, I mean, cardboard, aluminum foil, like it looked cheap, right? Yeah, and they turned it on, and Kofi Kingston came out talking in it with a Jamaican accent, and it was like, oh, we went back too far.
Back in time. Yep.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. But
my other note is I have his foreign accent, his accent, Apollo's accent. I said it reminded me of the movie Trading Places when Eddie Murphy is in the train with Dan Aykroyd, and he was Nicky Umbuku from Cameroon. And because like you said, you can hear everything.
Yeah.
And you know, when he's got the up, like all of a sudden, you know, he's got that great accent.
Which I give him credit for. I'm glad you said that. I almost forgot to mention it. I give him credit for that. When they were talking, just the banter and the trash talk during the match, Apollo Crews kept his accent in moments when I don't want to say he didn't need it, but he could have easily slipped out of it at times. And I think it's good dedication to the character that he kept it. I did make one note that as obviously ceremonial as it looks, the spear that he carries is very impractical as a weapon.
I wonder if he borrowed that from Saba Simba.
I forgot about that. No, not a fair comparison.
Yeah. Tony Atlas is looking for his spear. Right.
But moving on to another match that more of an angle than a match. We had Braun Strowman, who was supposed to wrestle Shane McMahon. For reasons I can't figure out, they have decided to go with the storyline that the giant monster among men, destroyer of anybody he's been in the ring with for years, guy who beat Goldberg at WrestleMania, is somehow now crippled by anxiety because he's been bullied his whole life. So not saying that big guys can't get bullied. I'm a rather large individual as far as the average American, and I was bullied as a kid, but I've also haven't built my entire persona around being a man-killing machine. So I think it always gets me, because they did the same thing with Nia Jax a few years ago, if you remember, in her feud with Alexa Bliss, where she was bullied for her size a year after she'd been this soulless killing monster that had never taken crap from anybody her whole life.
Right, now she's sensitive.
Exactly. The fact that Shane McMahon is be able to get the one up on him with the slime and the reenactment of the Nickelodeon special. But obviously, building up to this match, they had the video of Shane McMahon injuring, heavy air quotes, injuring his leg training. So he runs into Elias backstage. They talk about Elias wants to do a performance. Shane McMahon drops the news. Hey, you're going to replace me. Braun Strowman versus Elias. Let's be honest, this was a glorified squash match. Elias did get a little bit of time in because of Jackson Riker's outside interference, but Strowman kicks out, power slam. I mean, really, it was, again, just like the match with Big E and Apollo, felt more like an angle than a match. As far as match quality goes, C-. Really, I mean, I'm not. Elias can do better, and I get what they're doing here, but I think it kind of exposed some of the weaknesses Braun Strowman has in the match. But what are your thoughts?
Also gave it a C-. What I didn't like was, you know, you have Shane McMahon injuring himself and taking himself out of the match, but like within the last couple of weeks, when you know, Miz had the Hershey squirts backstage, you know. Shane made him wrestle, but now like Shane decided he didn't want to wrestle. And I mean, so that was one kind of contradiction. What I didn't like either though was, you know, obviously Braun had to do what Braun had to do and go and squash Elias, but there was no, you know, I wanted him to say, well, where the hell is Shane, and do something where, you know, because all of a sudden, did he forget about Shane for the night? I didn't, I heard the announcers were talking it up, but I didn't see anything on Braun's part like to, you know, further the feud.
Right. Well, speaking of you mentioned The Miz, there wasn't really an opportunity on this show to talk about him. But we'll get to him at the end of the program when we talk about where things look like they're going right now. But I think I'll give a pass to Shane McMahon for for getting away with I'll give him a pass for getting away with that with this, but this McCann.
Well, yeah, he can do whatever he wants, too.
Exactly.
Can we backtrack a second? We forgot one course. Match, which took place during the Old Spice commercial.
Oh, yes, of course.
We have to cover that.
Absolutely. There was not one. They had a backstage segment, an Old Spice commercial, where Akira Tozawa is harassing the Old Spice salesman about where is R-Truth. R-Truth is, of course, hiding in the Old Spice display, which results in not one, but two title changes. The 24/7 title, for a short moment, the Old Spice commercial spokesman was the 24/7 champion. And R-Truth rolled him up, took it back, and ran off. Grabbed some Old Spice on his way out the door, which I'm not going to lie. You know my opinion on the 24/7 title, but I actually thought that was kind of creative because it certainly felt like cheap promotion. If you've seen some of the segments where they've had the female superstars advertising those corn dogs, it felt like one of those shoehorned promotions until you realize it was actually part of the angle. Continuing Akira Tozawa's quest to get that 24/7 title back, which I'm glad he's alive. He's died twice in his quest for that, between the fall and then being eaten by a shark. So good to see him kicking again.
And the average Joe guy, isn't he an NXT wrestler? I think he is. I can't think of his name offhand.
I made a note of that as well, that I recognized him, but I couldn't put my finger on who he was.
I thought I saw Drew Gulak in the beginning of the commercial. I think it was him.
But well, the Old Spice salesman wasn't Drew Gulak.
Right. No, the average Joe guy is somebody different. I think Drew Gulak was in the beginning of the commercial.
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I misunderstood your point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I made it.
I can't think of the guy's name, but Joe Average was, he's some NXT guy.
Yeah, I'm sure our audience will correct us on that one, but I made a note and I couldn't figure out who it was either.
Yeah.
But this is about the point in the show. We just had a couple matches you and I both thought were below average at best. This is when the show starts to pick up, and I think it ended on a high note. Well, I should say the second half of the show is a tale of two pay-per-views, really. It started with Shinsuke Nakamura against Seth Rollins. Obviously, this stems from Seth Rollins coming back. He's doing a modified version of his Monday Night Messiah, I guess Friday Night Messiah now, in his feud with Cesaro. And he's had some ups and downs with Nakamura. And I thought this was great. I mean, these two work phenomenally well together. Two of easily the best workers you have on SmackDown right now. I mean, we've talked about it before, how we thought it's, I don't want to say unfair, but they definitely could have done more with Nakamura, and I think he would have been a credible main eventer.
Agree.
So,
I gave it a 3.5 stars. I gave it a B+.
Yep.
I was actually... it was one of those matches that I thought was so good that I wanted it to keep going for a little bit more. If they had given themselves a little bit more time.
And I'll say, and the announcers definitely hyped it up, but the setup to the finish, Seth Rollins counters what looked like the Kinshasa with the elbow. And then he went for almost like looked like he was going to do kind of a Shining Wizard. But he tucks his foot into Nakamura's leg while Nakamura's kneeled in front of him, and then like changes direction mid-flow into this just fluid kick to the back of the head, which put Nakamura on all fours, stomp 1, 2, 3. I've never seen anything like that before. I thought it was, I mean, clearly not something that you build up on the fly. Like, it looked like that was something those two had worked on, or at least something Rollins had practiced. If it wasn't, holy crap, good for him. But I thought that was a phenomenal move to set it up. and it just shows the trust you put in him. Because there was a point where he's balancing his foot on the crux of Nakamura's leg and blindly kicking him in the back of the neck. That shows a trust there, that they, those two work together. I couldn't have pulled that off. And I mean, I don't mean physically. I mean, I don't even know if I'd trust somebody to balance and blindly hit me like that. Right. So good on him. I thought it was great. Same thing. I actually gave the match, you said B plus, I said A minus. I the only thing that stopped it, like you said, I think this match could have had a few more minutes and would have been just as good, if not better.
Yeah, I mean, and I did not expect Shinsuke to win. I knew Seth was going to win, but I it was just a really great quality match.
Well, and I like, yes, Shinsuke's taken a lot of falls. More than he should have. I think he should have been stronger overall in his run on the main roster. But this match was incredibly competitive, incredibly well done, and you're building Seth Rollins up as one of the better wrestlers. So I don't think eating this loss hurts Shinsuke in the long run.
No, I don't think so.
Good to see. Not like him losing three times semi-clean to Jinder Mahal or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder where this is going to lead to for both of them.
Yeah, obviously it seems like the main event of, or excuse, not the main event, excuse me, the WrestleMania match is going to be Rollins and Cesaro.
Cesaro.
Which, honestly, and we'll probably talk about this as we get closer to our WrestleMania prediction show, that really seems like a match that the only logical conclusion is for Cesaro to win, which... Now here's something, and this surprised me. This was brought up by one of the analytics. If that does happen, that will be Cesaro's first singles match in WrestleMania history. Wow. He's been involved in Rumbles, Battle Royals, ladders, tags. This will be his first one-on-one singles match if that's what ends up happening.
I would like to see him get a bit more of a push, and if he goes over, of course, then he's going to have that push. But I think he's definitely paid his dues. The guy is incredible.
Yeah,
he's very likable too. Personality wise, I like him better as a babyface personally. I mean, not that he wasn't he was a pretty decent heel when he was with Sheamus, but I'd like to see the guy do well.
Oh, and I thought the bar was phenomenal because him and Sheamus played off each other well. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But I mean, he's had good runs, his team with Tyson Kidd and some other activities. But yeah, no, definitely. But speaking of brawlers and you mentioned Sheamus, he's in the next match. This was the no holds barred match between Drew McIntyre and Sheamus. Now, before I get into this match, this right here is, I think, the biggest dropped ball this pay-per-view had. In the lead up to Fastlane on Raw, they announced Drew McIntyre against Bobby Lashley, WWE Championship match at WrestleMania. The problem is you now have Drew McIntyre versus Sheamus, no holds barred, absolutely no stakes whatsoever. This should have been a number one contenders match. Because then, yes, we all knew McIntyre was going to go over. He has to build up this strong, look like a credible threat to Lashley. But to just have these two hoss it out, yes, I get it. It's a blood feud. This kind of obviously ended it based on where everybody seems to be going. But I think they lost the opportunity for this match to just mean that much more by having it be the number one contenders match. Right. Because let's say Sheamus wins, he still has no claim to the title picture. Drew McIntyre is the number one contender. So I thought this was the opportunity, the lost opportunity they had. This should have been a number one contenders match. But with that said, this match was incredible. I'm not the biggest fan of the no holds barred, let's just beat the crap out of each other type matches, because far too often in today's product, people don't sell beatings the way they used to. For our older fans, you go back and watch Jerry Lawler against Terry Funk or the Von Erichs and the Freebirds and see some of these bloody beat-em-up matches. I hit you in the head with a chair. I put you through a table. You sell it. in today's no holds barred matches, not to shortchange them again, but AEW recently had one with two of their female competitors in no holds barred Bloodfest, and watching somebody get suplexed or powerbombed or slammed through two tables and hit with barbed wire, and immediately they're up fighting again. No selling chair shots, no selling kendo sticks. These matches have far too much room to look crazy and look stupid. The other thing, and I've mentioned this in conversation, I don't think you and I have ever had this conversation, but matches like this also have the threat of breaking immersion by having stuff that's not realistic. And I'm not saying that in the sense of wrestling. I mean, you got two guys beating the crap out of each other, right? I reach under the ring, I pull out a chair. Okay, there's going to be chairs under the ring. Anybody that's ever set one up or worked at a wrestling show knows you keep stuff under there. I pull out a toolbox, hammer, screwdriver, fine, whatever. Maybe, just maybe, you might have a ladder, maybe for lighting or something, but okay. But in these matches, then what happens? I reach under the ring, I pull out a trash can full of kendo sticks. Under what logical reason is that? Or a shopping cart with two stop signs in it. Like, you know, why is that there? Right. That's there because you need something to hit people with. But you might not realize it as a fan, but you'll definitely, your brain says, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. And I think it hurts the narrative.
Yeah, like, are the ring crew going to use those during their lunch hour? Like, what's going on?
Exactly.
Yeah, now, as far as Sheamus goes, that's one thing that I really enjoy. I enjoy, like, the last few weeks seeing Sheamus back in the spotlight. And I don't know what you think about it, but I kind of was thinking that maybe they were going to make WrestleMania three-way.
Right.
Because, he hung in there with Lashley, and he definitely hung in there with Drew McIntyre. He's proved that he can hold his own against these guys.
Right, and he's a multi-time champion,
right?
In his own right, he's what, a four-time WWE champion, heavyweight champion. Like, I believe that Sheamus on any given day he can win a fight, especially his derby hat wearing brawler that he is now.
Yeah, so I was kind of. I mean, when I watched Raw and he was backstage with with Matt Riddle or Riddle on Monday night, and now he's messing with this guy. It's like, man, that was a quick come down. I mean, he really, I thought he did very, very well. I thought he would reap some kind of reward from it.
Yeah. I think, and honestly, as much as they seem to be building Riddle up, if that is a WrestleMania match, I could easily see Sheamus winning that and let Riddle, Chelo, go kind of I think a Sheamus Keith Lee match would work really well if you're going to put him back into the scene. But to go back to the match itself, I think they did a couple things I really liked. Obviously, under the ring, like I was just talking about, they pull out the pile of kendo sticks, and why were they there? They, you know, but whatever. They used them well. I give Sheamus credit as a pale individual. The welts and bruises show up, you know, so you see all the red marks.
Quite well.
Oh. Speaking of marks, I want to go back to something. Drew McIntyre's ring attire. He had the William Wallace face, the Scottish face paint. I thought that looked great. The sword. Obviously, I like the entrance, the stab and the sword, but I think McIntyre looked good for this match.
I thought there was something wrong with my laptop. It's like, why does his face look like that? Then I realized, oh, okay.
Yeah, he came out with the blue and white paint. Now, I did kind of crack up when he stabbed the sword. I don't know if he stabbed it too hard, but it noticeably, like, went in at an angle. So, I think he got a little into his match there. They really kind of explored the space of the Thunderdome, beating each other into the screens. They had the moment where McIntyre threw Sheamus through some screens, and then, of course, the obligatory sparks to show that it was actually electricity. I like how they worked that, and then where they were. And this is something, because you and I have been very critical of how bad announcing can be. I like that they made sure to mention that even though it's no holds barred, anything goes, you still have to win in the ring.
Yes.
So it kind of explained why, despite beating the crap out of each other with everything they get a hold of, they were still clearly trying to work each other back to the ring. Yeah. I like that they did that. Sheamus hit the brogue kick on the outside. White noise through the announce table. I think, yes, McIntyre came back, but I think he sold enough of the beating that I didn't feel like he was no selling being put through a table. And then Sheamus tried with the chair. McIntyre ended up countering it. DDT, Claymore, and great match. I said I gave it an A-. I just can't get over some of the little silliness with the sparks and the kendo sticks, but I thought up to this point, match of the night by far. Yes, and sir. I really wish this had been a number one contenders match, because I think it would have just meant that much more to me watching it.
Yes, I agree. And I gave it a 3.75 stars and an A-. So we're on the same page there.
Okay, there you go. So from match, dominant match between two rather large men, to the first intergender match we've had in quite some time. This was Randy Orton versus Alexa Bliss. Obviously, you and I talked about this off air. You knew this wasn't going to be a wrestling match. You knew it was an angle going into it. I think it depends on your opinion of the magic of the superpowers. You know, where do you draw the line on realism versus suspension of disbelief? You know, that Alexa Bliss can make Randy Orton throw up the black goo. She can clearly throw fireballs. You see her looking around, and then pieces of the ring, the lights from the overhead fall on him, the rigging. Where do you say, okay, that's too much, versus the Undertaker is powered by Paul Bearer's urn, or some of the wonderful fantasy gimmicks that came from the territory days? I think the lighting and a little bit of the black goo, I think you teetered a little too much on silliness versus this is cool. And then as the match went on, or the exchange went on, you saw the hands come out from under the ring, the red lights, the Fiend is back. The exchange there was great. I personally love the post-fire look. I think the mask with the melted Fiend face, I love that look. I definitely get Kane vibes from what they're doing. He came back from the fire. Alexa Bliss pushes Orton into him. Sister Abigail, she chooses a very unique pinning position.
Right.
1, 2, 3. Not to sound inappropriate, but I'm sure Randy Orton didn't complain when they pitched that idea to him.
Yeah. Extra practice there, probably.
You know what? You might have to do it 2 or 3 more times. I don't think we got it right that take. It's clearly Kane 2.0. They're building up the Fiend to be. You burned him alive. You literally murdered him on TV. So have him come back. Clearly, WrestleMania build up, and they already confirmed it. Fiend against Orton. This goes to one of those. What you and I were talking about with musts, the Fiend without question has to win this match, and I think he has to win it in convincing fashion. Or you risk what they did at Hell in a Cell a couple years ago, where you completely destroyed his character by having Seth Rollins beat him to the point where the ref stopped the match. You can't really grade this as a match. I thought as an angle, as a whole, I gave it a B. I wasn't quite B plus A minus area. Like I said, I think some of you teeter a little much on the silliness, but I've always been a fan of what they're doing with the Fiend. I like to see more characters in my wrestling. And I think he's one of the few true out there characters. I could see the Fiend in Memphis in the 80s. I could see the Fiend working for Kevin Sullivan in Florida. you know, I think he fits some of that character built work, and I like it. But what about you?
I had a flashback, and at first I thought, like, this is crazy, this is ridiculous, you know, being an old school fan. But then I thought, you know what? I remember what the whole thing with Papa Shango and the Ultimate Warrior.
Oh yeah.
I guess it was, you know, stuff started coming out of it. It was black stuff running down his face.
Yeah. It was like hair was bleeding or something.
Yeah, and then another time, I think he just kind of got, you know, I just kind of got sick, and I thought, like, well, I enjoyed that. So I think they, like you said, I think, you know, obviously there was no match. You knew there wasn't going to be any physical altercation between Bliss and you know, Randy Orton. But I think, you know, I think people are really happy to see the Fiend back, and you know, and not only back, but a new iteration of the Fiend. So I think it's going to generate a lot of interest. Like you said, I don't think there's any doubt that he's going to go over at WrestleMania. And then you'll see what happens from there.
Well, I mean, they'll treat him just like they did when they were building him up. He'll go over. They'll build him up strong. Maybe he'll put the title back on him, and then he'll lose to Goldberg in Saudi Arabia again. So Goldberg's due for his squashing up and
coming. I think they're going to have James Ellsworth in Saudi Arabia.
No. I think they're done with him.
Probably.
But, yeah, I thought that whole bit, I gave it a B. It didn't take away from anything. Usually when you go to matches like this that are more angles than matches, it hurts the flow of the show. I don't think this did. I liked, again, I'm kind of a stickler for some of the craziness, so I liked seeing the Fiend come out from under the ring. You know, I know some of your staunch critics of the goofiness. You know, I imagine your Jim Cornette or some of your friends at Pro Wrestling Stories are probably going to write about how stupid this was, but I loved it, so that's just me. But now I will say, going on, we come up to the main event. This was, without question, not just match of the night. This is one of the better matches I've seen in a long time. It was Roman Reigns defending the Universal title against Daniel Bryan with Edge as the enforcer. Edge won that right on SmackDown by defeating Jey Uso. I think this match, which was, again, kind of the tale of three stories here. You had Daniel Bryan starting by almost being playful, kind of toying with Roman Reigns, like, I'm clearly the better wrestler. I think Daniel Bryan, the way he was able to evolve during the match, in the match, with his character, he continues to prove, I'll argue it, with despite what some people might point to, some of your styles, I think Daniel Bryan's the greatest wrestler in the world right now. He's certainly the best wrestler WWE has on their roster, and I think he continues to prove it. This match, like I said, he got Reigns with the takedowns. Then you had the transition to Reigns being the powerhouse and Daniel Bryan having to kind of be the scrappy fighter. And then it goes from there. I mean, you had attempts at the yes lock. He was softening up the legs. Reigns was started kind of, which I give Roman Reigns credit. He told a great story. And this goes to you and I. We've probably said this to each other 1,000 times, that the fact there's no ring psychology in wrestling anymore. This match told such a great story.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so, I mean, you had Daniel Bryan working the legs. You had Roman Reigns getting angry. You had him, you know, his kind of powerhousing. And then the shenanigans happened, which we knew we're going to set up. As much as I love the match, the second you had that moment where the referee was standing behind Roman Reigns, right behind Roman Reigns,
oh, yeah,
you're like, okay, you know what's coming, right? Daniel Bryan goes for the knee. Goes for the knee, hits the ref by accident. So, okay, I'll let you take it from there. So you got the ref down. What are your thoughts at this point?
Yeah, so then Edge comes in, and you think, okay, so, like, now maybe, you know, maybe Daniel has a chance. And, I mean, it just went back and forth. And like you said, like, when he had him at one point, when he had Roman in the yes lock, and Roman sold that move as well as I've ever seen anybody sell a move. to the point where you thought he was actually going to, you know, pass out, and then you saw him kind of like very faintly tapping out, which of course nobody saw.
Right. But
it was, I like you said, I mean, I gave this an A, 4 stars. Definitely the match of the night, I mean, arguably maybe the match of the year, probably one of the better matches I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I guess, so what I don't understand is now, did Edge turn heel in that match?
You know, maybe. I think that's the thing, maybe. Because you had, like you said, Edge gets involved because the ref's down. Edge goes to make the count. As the enforcer, he's allowed to do that. Then, excuse me, Brian had a modified triangle into the yes lock. That's when Jey Uso comes in. He kicks Edge, kicks Brian, grabs the chair. There's some crazy shenanigans with the chair. Of course, Brian hits Edge. As you said, then, you know, Edge snaps, lays them both out with the chair. Roman Reigns able to crawl over 1, 2, 3. It certainly seemed heelish, especially because you've built Edge up as the veteran who knows what he's doing. He's been in that. Something always kills me. Wrestling's been doing it for decades. And it's one of those things you just kind of accept is Edge knows the business. He knows how a fight works. He knows how a match works. He can't possibly have looked at what happened in his mind and think, oh, Daniel Bryan hit me on purpose.
Right.
You know, how many times have you seen in a match where, you know, okay, I get the, where you're holding the guy and you go to kick him and he ducks and you accidentally kick your partner. That happens. I'm talking about where you push somebody and he bumps into the guy on the ring apron, or they bump into each other in the ring. Come on, you know, and then they act like, oh, everybody believes we did everything on purpose. Edge, you built him up as the veteran who knows the business. He knew Daniel Bryan didn't hit him on purpose. He should have, but he acted like it anyway. So yes, clearly Edge is kind of a heelish. It wasn't a betrayal, like full blown heel turn, but certainly it made Daniel Bryan the baby face, the pure, unadulterated white knee baby face in this 3-way exchange, which really seems like where they're going with Mania is going to be a triple threat.
Well, I think it has to be because, I mean, number one, why would Edge become a heel? I mean, he's not going to go into WrestleMania one-on-one with Roman Reigns as a heel because Reigns is the heel. So
right.
That would make no sense. I mean, the only way it makes sense, and I'm so glad that, you know, after the, you know, the squash match that Daniel Bryan had at Elimination Chamber, that he came back, and I mean, that was one of the, like you said, one of the best matches I've ever seen. And if anything warrants a 3-way at WrestleMania, that definitely does.
Well, I mean, Daniel Bryan's got, not only can he argue that Edge cost him the match, but there's the footage of Roman Reigns tapping. So he's got that too. If Edge was a competent mediator, or if they had had an official, Daniel Bryan's the champion. But I think you've got Roman Reigns the heel, you got Edge the tweener, and you got Daniel Bryan the face, which is a perfect triple threat match. You want a triple threat match to be three people who legitimately just want to destroy each other.
Right.
Personally, I think going forward, because I gave this match an A+, nothing about it, even the what I was talking about with Edge should have known better. That's just wrestling. I'm not going to hold it against anybody. I had no complaints whatsoever. I tried to find something about this match that I could criticize, and I couldn't. The obvious ref bump aside, because, again, that's just wrestling. Anytime there's a ref bump, it's blatantly obvious it's coming.
Well, you knew that was going to happen.
Absolutely. And I thought the Usos' timing was great. Edge's timing was great. Daniel Bryan with the chair, where he kind of had that contemplative moment, like, do I really want to use the chair? I just thought it was great across the board. Match of the night, match of the month. It's the best match I've seen so far this year. I know it's only March, but if the two of them with Edge can do this at WrestleMania, I think it'll steal the show by a mile and a half. And I like that. The announcement was made that Saturday's main event is going to be Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley, which would make sense. Now, Sunday's main event, assuming they don't have some kind of Undertaker, and I'm not saying him, I'm saying like that, where they're going to have a cinematic match that has to go on last, like the way the Boneyard did.
Right.
I think Sunday's main event is the triple threat, steals the show. And honestly, this is the point where usually when you insert somebody into a big profile like this, you're inserting them to take the fall. The Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar feud, and then they had the triple threat with Dean Ambrose. Dean Ambrose is there to take the fall. You know that's why he's in the match. Reminds me of there was a toy line that came out. It was a three-pack, and it was, I want to say it was Braun Strowman, Brock Lesnar, and like Curtis Axel. Some random, you know, which apparently the story was Lesnar wanted Axel to be like, in the toy line. Which of these don't belong? But the package, the joke was like, you know, when you can tell who's going to take the fall.
Right.
With the three of them, Edge, Bryan, and Roman, I could see anybody beating anybody. Which is great, because usually with triple threats, you know who's taking the fall. Even if you don't know who's winning, you know who's taking the fall. I could see anybody beating anybody. Honestly, I think you keep the title on Roman. Great. Keep the title on Edge, or put the title on Edge. There's your veteran with his last moment. Daniel Bryan's made it very clear this might be his last WrestleMania. Having him win one more title, I could see it going anyway. And I think this match did nothing but set up a great story. Well, let me rephrase that. This was a phenomenal match and also a great story. It's the match I'm most interested in right now going into Mania.
I totally agree. And I've been very critical of WWE for their lack of build on so many different matches. And I think, I mean, so far they have like really aced this one. They really have. I mean, they've built my interest in seeing this match at WrestleMania.
Exactly. And you said it right there with build. Daniel Bryan's been laying the seeds for months before he even declared for the Rumble. This might be my last Mania, and Edge, obviously, the comeback, and I'm going to win the Rumble. And heel Roman's been great. This build. I mean, I can't remember. I tried. I made in my notes. I tried. I cannot remember the last time there's been a triple threat storyline that's had such a good build and I could see going in any direction and each one of them would be equally viable and enjoyable.
The only thing that was missing, which we won't see, though, is a little bit of color. I think that actually would have been a great touch. Not yeah. realistic to expect it, but I think if that, you know, that would really have like put it over the top.
Yeah, no, I could see that, but I think unfortunately, you know, within the PG era, and you just had Sheamus and Drew McIntyre. I mean, you put Sheamus literally through a pile of television screens, glass and sharp metal, without a cut. I don't think you're going to be able to bleed Daniel Bryan off a Superman punch.
Right.
But no, you're right. I think a little bit of color, maybe save it for Mania. A little bit of color would have done wonders. But right now you've got Daniel Bryan, greatest wrestler. I argue greatest wrestler in the world, greatest wrestler in the company. Heel Roman is the best heel character they have had in years. And I mean that, not Brock Lesnar go away. Like, for God's sakes, I genuinely don't like you, heat. Like, I love the character, and he reminds me of a Ted DiBiase. You know, I want to see you lose. I want to see you get your ass kicked, but I love what you're doing as a bad guy. Right. Bobby Heenan, you know, you cheered when Hogan got his hands on Bobby Heenan, but you loved and respected what Bobby Heenan was doing. When Roman Reigns finally falls, be it he taps out to Bryan, Edge spears him, whatever, or maybe he wins and stays champion for loses it, you know, till next WrestleMania. When that finally happens, it's going to mean something, and hopefully they don't waste it on some fluke or somebody that had no business beating Roman. Like, I hate to say it, but one of the first televised losses AJ Styles took was in his feud with Dean Ambrose when he lost to James Ellsworth. I should say not one of the first regular. James Ellsworth beat him twice, and it was like, wait a minute, Okay, I just felt stupid. But
yeah.
I love it. I like where they're going with it. It's great stuff. Overall, like I said, it was the tale of two pay-per-views. First couple matches were slow and silly and poorly executed. Second half, top to bottom, was just great stuff. Overall, I said this pay-per-view was a B+. I think if the first half had been a little stronger, it easily would have been an A, which is really saying something, because let's be honest, you've got the Rumble, and for some reason they've decided Elimination Chamber is going to be the pay-per-view between the Rumble and Mania. You've had a couple of chamber moments, but you had two pay-per-views between Mania and the Rumble. Now you've just had Fastlane. 3 weeks later is Mania. This could have easily been a throwaway pay-per-view that nobody cared about. But instead of that, you had some great matches, you told some great stories, and you've built up your Lashley, or excuse me, your Big E and the Apollo story. You've got the main event with Bryan and Reigns. Obviously, the Fiend comes back. I think it's great stuff. B+, great show. Could have easily been worse. I think they did a great job. What are your thoughts?
You know, pretty much the same thing. After the Braun Strowman match, I really thought, man, this is just going to be a throwaway. This is, you know, and then it just completely changed after that. And I mean, that last match really, I mean, my interest in WrestleMania went from, you know, blah to like, now I'm looking forward to it. I just hope, like you said, they don't mess it up. But I mean, they did such a good job building that matchup.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great stuff. And I look forward to Mania, two nights again, Saturday, Sunday. So that should be fun. A couple years ago, Mania ran till almost 1 a.m, including the pre-show. It was something like 7.5 hours. I thought that was, even as a fan, that was too much for me.
That's overload, yes.
And I mean, I remember I had friends over to watch the show, and Bobby Lashley came out. He was defending the Intercontinental title against Finn Balor. And when I'm looking at my watch, it was like quarter after midnight. The main event hadn't even started yet. I was like, holy crap. It begins to sink in like, holy shit, this show is long.
Yeah.
But no, I liked splitting it up over two nights. There's been some talk about doing that permanently, but we'll see once fans come around, which they're going to have fans. They're selling tickets to Mania. The news story, obviously, the Hall of Fame is going to be virtual. Speaking of the Hall of Fame, we're going to end on a little bit of a news note. We talked about it before. Batista, apparently, has been pulled from the Hall of Fame ceremony at his request, he said. The story that I looked at earlier, we were talking about, he said he won't be able to attend due to obligations, and he doesn't want to be involved in a Hall of Fame ceremony unless he can be involved. He wants to talk to the fans, interact. So I can respect that decision. And then the other story, apparently the leak, we'll see once it's confirmed, coming out of the dirt sheets, is the expect Rob Van Dam to be announced as a Hall of Fame candidate this year, because they're going to induct both 2020 and 2021's class. So far so good there. On the news side of things, the WWE has officially granted Andrade Cien Almas's release. And apparently the story goes, his release does not have a no-compete clause linked to it. Again, this is all backstage news. But the backstage stories coming out are that Charlotte put out an ultimatum that she threatened to, I don't know if it was walk or do something, because obviously her and Andrade are engaged, if they didn't grant him his release. And she called their bluff, so they let him go. She will not, as of right now, she will not be at Mania this year. That's could be related, could not be. That's not for me to speculate. But she has announced she's been fighting COVID. So if you know, hopefully, and obviously, Ric Flair commented on her recovery. So that's, COVID has done a lot of bad things to a lot of good people last year and a half. So hopefully speedy recovery for her, and we'll see where that goes. And then best of luck to Andrade. He's a phenomenal talent that from what it sounds like, just kind of got lost in the shuffle because the modern WWE writers room just can't stand people who don't speak English. Which is a shame, because if you look at someone like an Asuka or Shinsuke Nakamura, where English might not be their strong suit, they can still cut a decent promo with the hybrid language. But hopefully that story's not true. That'd be a damn shame if that's what kept Andrade back, because he was such a good talent. His matches against Aleister Black and some of his matches in when he was NXT champion were phenomenal. Obviously, Zelina Vega is a free agent as well, so maybe we'll see those two working together again. I thought that was a great pairing. But it's been a heck of a week, and I look forward to where we're going from here. But Benny, as we wrap up tonight, who was our friends behind the scenes? You said we had a sponsor for our recap show tonight.
Yeah, a couple of sponsors. One is Tiger Towing and Recovery, Ron and the gang in New London, Iowa, 319-759-5757. Tell them that Dan and Benny sent you. Their motto is, when we hook up, we pull out. And contrary to popular belief, the hokey pokey isn't what it's all about. Pulling out is what it's all about. So that's sponsor number one. Sponsor number two is Joni and the gang at Anywhere Apparel. Hoping that soon they're going to start, you know, the Bad Benny t-shirts are going to be hot off the press. They're your number one designer, screen printing and embroidery. They're two locations in Iowa, 319-886-5885 in Mount Pleasant. And again, tell them Dan and Benny sent you.
There you go. And as we continue to grow and move on, move out, I mean, we continue to expand. Dan and Benny in the Ring on Facebook, where obviously our home base is Podbean. We're on Google, iHeartRadio, Pandora, you name it. You can find us anywhere, podcasts or listen to. We just continue to grow. It means a lot. Our fan interactions on the Facebook page have been incredible. We wouldn't be here without them. So I continue to say how much I appreciate the fan base and everything they're doing for us. And obviously, Benny, you've been able to hunt us down some good sponsors, and we continue to grow. We've got connections. A quick shout out to some of our local affiliates in that VCW, Virginia Championship Wrestling. Check out their stuff on YouTube. SWE Fury out of Texas. Check out their stuff on YouTube. And our shout out to our friend Tombstone Jesus and Devotion Championship Wrestling out west. Check out some of their stuff. It's great. They just had I posted it on our Facebook page, their new belt design, which I think is phenomenal. Great looking belt, beautiful strap. But yeah, we've got a lot of friends, a lot of good stuff coming up. We've got obviously our WrestleMania prediction show. We have two episodes coming up where we're going to hear one of the best fan stories in wrestling history. And we're going to be talking with some friends from Pro Wrestling Stories. So we got a lot of good stuff coming up for everybody. And again, I reiterate, it means a lot, the fan reactions we've been getting. So for Bad Benny, the BS Express himself, I'm Dan Sebastiano. Have a good night, everybody. And as always, happy wrestling.
Hasta la vista.